The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 17th of January, 2019. On the podcast today is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator, XPD is a ticker there, and Stephen discusses recent press comments regarding a potential acquisition and a senior management appointment. Plus, I also have on Vadim Alexandra, Managing Director of Northland Capital Partners, soon to be SP Angel, and Vadim talks about Plarium Imaging, a medical imaging technology company. I also have on Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, and talks about the following companies who have news out this week: GBC Group, Sage Group, and Whitbread. Plus, as always, I have two lists, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Blythe, Chief Executive Officer of Expediator. XPD is the ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Yes, good morning.
You got two bits of news out. One, I suppose, you didn't want to share, but we'll get to that in a bit, and one today. But before we get into the news, Stephen, there's someone listening right now who's not familiar with the company. Can you summarise Expediator, please?
Yes, we're an international freight management company with a particular emphasis on the Eastern European markets. And we split the business into four divisions. Our freight forwarding division, which we've been doing now for around about 31 years. We have a logistics division. We have a division affinity, which has got a couple of thousand customers in it, running 14,000 trucks around Europe. And we have our ever-increasingly active e-commerce business. Mm-hmm. So those are the four divisions.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, yesterday you released some news about in response to media speculation. Can you take us into the details of this, please, Stephen?
Yeah, there was unfortunately a press leak into the Slovenian press, and therefore we felt it necessary to comment, and so we had to issue an RNS. We are indeed, and have been for the last 3-4 months, been looking at an opportunity in the Slovenian market for the market leading company in Slovenia, but it also covers 8 countries in that Balkans area, and also a small operation in the Ukraine. So geographically, this business fits perfectly into where we are as Expediator. It has overland road, asset-light freight forwarder, and with air, sea, and road, we think it would be a fantastic opportunity for us. We've got a customer base of a lot of customers, so there should be lots of crossovers into our existing operations.
Yeah.
So we're quite excited about it. We don't want to get overexcited because there are it's now down to the last three in a bidding process, but and those three were noted in the Slovenian press. Mm. We think we're well placed amongst that competition, but you know, until we've got it, and we're just a bidder.
Yeah.
We're hoping to be successful, though.
Yeah, and in relation to this, you've released a date, I suppose. You've appointed a new group head of mergers and acquisitions and integration. Take us through who this person is, if you could, Stephen.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we went to the market back in August 17. We've done 5 acquisitions. And a lot of those acquisitions I've actually controlled. But my time gets divided equally into organic opportunities as well as M&A activity. The scale of the deals that we're looking at, we felt it was necessary to get somebody in to head up our M&A and integration teams, and in fact build a team. And Simon is ideally placed, qualified chartered accountant, corporate finance background, and also has had 8-9 years in our industry sector. So Simon, we welcome him onto the team, and he will be heading up that, which is fantastic for me personally. So Simon will be able to do a lot of the work that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it enables me to do lots of other things, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know what? We have to, you know, breached this issue before, this subject of Brexit, and you've been very confident in this, and it's becoming ever more clear, and we can't go anywhere now without hearing Brexit, and there's obviously the people who voted Remain, so there'll be chaos at the borders if there's no deal. You have expertise in this area, so, you know, what's your take on this then, Stephen?
Well, this is my first Brexit discussion of the day, very early. it is on everybody's tongues at the moment. I've been reasonably consistent. As a business, we are well-placed. We have the customs badges for the ports and airports. We also have AEO-approved warehouses in place and facilities. What's going to happen on Brexit? Well, I was listening to Michael Portillo saying, you know, whoever says they know has probably got it wrong. So I won't offer any outcome as to what's going to happen. But in either situation, if we remain in the EU, we just carry on as normal and carry on making money. If there is a really hard Brexit and we go to WTO rules, and there's a lot of paperwork and processes that need to be done at the ports, we will be there to assist our customers. And in doing that, as a business, we'll be providing services, and therefore I expect us to make some money out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so for us as a business, it doesn't really offer up much of a problem. It offers more of an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, that's a tick in the box there. So, finally, Stephen, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, please give them the three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we've got a great team of people, young entrepreneurial people. We have a lot of things we're doing. I can't go into all of the details of that, but I'm actually currently overseas, and I've got a meeting in half an hour on another possible acquisition. So we will be growing the business a lot in the next year or two. When we make money, we pay it out. We've paid three dividends now. We will maintain paying dividends twice a year, interims and finals. We're an exciting stock. We think we're underpriced compared to our peers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's Stephen, good reasons to buy in, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stephen, do your own research, everyone. And like you say, one of the positives is that you as a business are not fazed and, in fact, see Brexit as a positive, which you see many companies these days blaming Brexit for any drop in their figures. It's almost like the excuse people can use. But it's nice to see a change there. Stephen, thanks for coming on, and no doubt we'll be speaking again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
I'm sure we will.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Vadim Alexander, Head of Business Strategy at Northland Capital Partners, which is in the process of being acquired by SP Angel. So exciting times there, Vadim.
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. Now today, we're going to be looking at a company called Polarin Imaging, POLX is the ticker. So first and foremost, Vadim, just give us sort of one-line summary. What is Polarin all about, please?
So Polarin is a medical devices / drug development business. It's what's known as a drug device combination business. And they're currently they're completing phase 3 trials for their lead technology, which is an imaging technology. It's for the imaging of the lung.
I see. Excellent stuff. And so I assume this is quite a big market, and what happens next then? So this next big thing is phase 3, so they're quite advanced. I mean, they're valued, I see it, around 13 million. So what's the news here? What's the size of the market? What's exciting about this company?
Yeah, so just a quick correction. The current market cap's about, you're not too far off. It's about 17 million sterling.
Okay.
But it's a very, very low price. And that's, I guess, one of the most exciting things about this company for the potential market that this technology can go after. Mm-hmm. We estimate that the immediate addressable market is roughly around $500 million in the U.S. alone. Just to give you some background on pulmonary disease, it has a burden of disease of about $150 billion in the U.S. It's a big area. Pulmonary disease is a huge area, and there's very little in the imaging space that's quite effective in this space. So, you know, the old technology is what most people have seen. So this is spirometry, where you blow into a tube, and that actually deduces what your lung capacity is and what certain problems with your lung. This is a very sophisticated imaging technology where you can see what's happening in the lung. You can visualize it, and you can also visualize something further, which is how the lung works, and you know how gas goes into your lung and through into your blood. So that's what's really novel here. It's really a genuinely a novel technology.
Yeah, and you're right. You know, I was looking at pre-fundraiser of 13 million. So they've just raised some money, haven't they? $4 million.
Correct, exactly. And, that's testament to the interest in this stock. So, you know, there's it was well supported. It just raised $4 million. That takes away any kind of capitalization risk for the business. You know, since it's listed, it's raised about $9 million. And they've only been listed since about April last year. So, you know, it's done very well. The company's done very well.
Yeah, yeah. And so this phase three, when's it expected to complete, or when do we expect to get some news from it?
Yes. So in terms of news flow, the company, again, that's the second big reason why this stock is interesting right now, is this year is going to be a very big year in terms of news flow for the company. So they are currently conducting phase three trials for this technology. The trials are due to read out sometime in the second half of this year. And as you know, for any kind of drug development business, that is the biggest milestone the company can achieve. And then after that, they can they'll submit to the FDA in the U.S. and then prepare for launch once they get approval. Now, the trial itself is the trials are very simple trials. With the FDA, you need to do two phase three trials. Mm-hmm. These ones are very small because the FDA considers xenon, which is the gas that's used in this technology. So you inhale xenon gas, and then you watch how this gas goes through the lungs, into the lungs, and through into across the blood barrier tissue in the lungs and into the blood. You watch this all through MR technology. It's all completely very safe. There's nothing radioactive. There are no radioactive isotopes. So the point being here is that the FDA considers this a safe technology, and as a result, there's really little downside to these trials. And consequently, the trials are very, very small and relatively short. We consider, our view is that the trials are pretty much a slam dunk, which is quite rare in this industry. It's not like taking a drug. It's xenon gas is a noble gas, and there's really no safety issues associated with it.
Yeah, so I mean, absolutely. I mean, looking further ahead here, so the commercialization of this is expected to take how long? Do you think, assuming the phase three has passed and all good, going good, you know?
Yes. So basically, let's assume that the phase threes are passed by the end of this year. Then you're looking at commercial launch sometime in 2020, mm-hmm. and then after that, This is the market that I was describing earlier. So this is an adjunct to technology to MR. So you sell these machines to create this gas alongside to MR to hospitals who have MR machines and they who would like to image the lung better. Okay, mm-hmm. There's 11,000 MR machines installed in the U.S. alone. If the FDA approves this, they can go after each and every one of those. But the company doesn't even have to do that. I mean, the beauty of this, and this is the beauty of a drug device combination business, is that once you install a machine, you can then charge for every scan that goes through, because the gas that they're producing, this xenon gas, is a billable event every time the gas is used as well. And that's the drug component to this drug device business. So the pull through from these machines are very much like a razor blade model. And that's where the all the forecasts for this business are based on the gas pull through. But yeah. You don't need to install 11,000 of these polarizers. You only need to install about 50 to have a very profitable business.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The other important bit is that they're already selling these machines to the research sector. Again, another thing that's unique about this company is that it's already revenue generating. So there is already a demand for these machines.
Okay, very interesting. Okay, all right. Well, let's just sum that up in three easy steps there. So if someone's likes the sound of this, but they're not yet following the story, Vadim, just give them three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on their page on Vox and add them to the watch list, please.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, this is, looking at this technology from the outside, it may seem a bit complicated, but the business case here is very simple. It's a low risk business, comparatively speaking, in terms of drug development. The xenon is a safe drug. We know that the technology works. We know it has a high probability of success on these phase three trials, and the company's already revenue generating, which is a bit of a proof of concept in terms of, the demand for this technology. So that's the first reason, is that it's low risk, relatively speaking. Pricing is a second reason. 17 million market cap for a company that's in phase three is very, very cheap. When you compare it to other companies that have phase three assets, it's already trading at a significant discount. And then finally, the last point is that the news flow this year is the big year. The phase three readouts are going to happen this year. And that really is the biggest milestone that any phase three company can be in. And we really think that these assets are going to deliver, because again, it's not a very difficult trial. The trials are very simple, and there's no reason why there's any downside. The drug is, as in the xenon component, is quite safe. So we think it works, and we think that xenon is safe. So in the end, I think this is going to be a good year for the company.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Marvellous. Vadim, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Very good. Pretty busy. Mid-January, lots of trading updates out, but it's better to be busy than not.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? When you've got nothing to do, that's why I hate Christmas, essentially. It just, I try and keep busy because, it's idle hands, idle mind as well. Just start thinking about nonsense, really, if you're not to keep yourself busy.
Justin, you can't hate Christmas. Christmas is fantastic. It's the only time of the year when I get to, spend some time with the family and not feel kind of guilty about not checking markets and Twitter and other stuff, because nothing much happens apart from, what was it this year? What was it, a 400-point fall or something on Christmas Eve on Wall Street? Nothing really, but there you go.
No, do you know what? I don't hate Christmas. I enjoy the run-up, the thought of Christmas. I think the mind is so powerful. It conjures up images of, just cozy stuff, eating lots of food, and all that. But you get to it, and the actual reality is always different. It's like the thought of actually winning the lottery is a lot better. The dreams you have, the things you do with it, it's probably better than the reality. And you, if you look at the stats, I think it's 72% who win the lottery end up sadder than they were before they won it, because they have all these issues they didn't see before. And so, it's almost the mind conjures up things. But, I like the thought of Christmas, but when it happens, I just think, is that it, really? I just think the mind is very powerful,
So all you describe, basically, to bring it rudely back to the stock markets and related, is expectations and reality, isn't it?
That's why you're a professional, Chris.
Professional loony, maybe, but the reality is that, it's all about expectations about everything. It's easy to believe, it's easy to hope, it's easy to get excited,
yes,
and then the harsh reality comes in. And that's the stock market game, isn't it?
Absolutely.
We all talk about, we think this is going to happen, that's going to happen, and it does or it doesn't, and share prices move up and down accordingly.
Absolutely. Do you know what? Especially, no more so than in pre-revenue stocks on the AIM market, right? I mean, I've done videos. I said, listen, if you are looking for high growth but high risk, don't worry too much about a company earning revenue and profits, because once they start generating revenue and profits, they're valued on that model, on a PE or or they extrapolate that. But before they have that, before the revenue comes in, and it's like a tech company or something, all they're valued on is hype. And that is a lot more powerful, yep. And a hope, and you know, and hype, hope, and potential is a lot more powerful than the actual reality of revenue. Because when it gets the revenue, it grinds back into reality. Then you know, but yeah, the power of thought is a very powerful thing. Anyway, let's get into the reality of figures, numbers, and big companies. So, who are you looking at this week, Chris?
Yeah, well, I've got to start off with GVC. Obviously, a well known name now in the gambling arena, but of course, it's a name which has acquired some other important and well-known brand names. Ladbrokes Coral, for example, is part now of the GVC empire. I like this one. I like it for a number of reasons. I think there's a lot of self-help because integrating Ladbrokes Coral business, I think, gives a lot of potential synergies and cost cuts and sort of other benefits of scale. We all know that potentially the American gambling market liberalizing could be a huge thing, and GVC are active over there. But I think fundamentally what I like about it is that it's a growth business, and it's a growth business, I think, at a reasonable price, you know, one of those GARP type businesses. Today's little update, they've talked about full year that's just finished. They'll have a full set of numbers on the 5th of March, but they've given some headlines today. The ones I like include profits are going to be a little bit ahead of expectations. That's always a big tick in the box. They seem to be doing all right there. But when I look under the hood, what I like particularly is some of the underlying revenue growth numbers. Because ultimately, as I say, it is a growth business. And I think, you know, it's got to keep on exhibiting some good metrics. So on that basis, you know, when they talk about things like a 15% advance in their core kind of online operations, that's a big, you know, tick in the box to me. That's a really good indication. And when I look again under the hood, it's not just things like Party Poker and Gala doing well. They said even some of the legacy Ladbrokes Coral sports betting things are doing all right too. So that's going good. Inevitably, the sort of the bookmaker offices they've got with the Ladbrokes Coral deal are not doing as well. They've seen a few declines there, but net-net, this is a growth business at an aggregate level. It's beating expectations in terms of profits. It's got that nice call option on US online sports betting and related growth to come in the future, potentially. And, you know, it's not a particularly expensive stock. You know, when I look at the rating, it's a single-digit PE rating. It's I think it's sensibly financed. They've got a little bit of debt, but I think they're generating cash to push it down. I like it, and it's been doing a bit of a 700 pence, which is where it is at the moment, or just under 700 pence, is a big old level on the share price chart. And my feeling is if it could decisively break through here, you know, on the basis of some of these good trends and numbers and potential, you know, we could open up another run towards 1,000 pence. So one I like, and good to see them beating numbers today.
Yeah. And yeah, well, do you know what? It has bounced off a low, I think, around about 650, isn't it? I mean, I can't see it going back below that now. So, you're thinking if the fundamentals are looking half decent, the outlook's quite good, then maybe it's one to keep a look at because it's at the, you know, a relatively sort of historic low year. So, where's it going back here? It hasn't been at this level, has it, since? Oh, in fact, it bounced on this level as well in February last year. It's February 2017.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. This is a big. Yeah, you know, this is a big level. So it's an interesting stock. Obviously, do your work on it. You know, you might be a customer of theirs, you know, on that basis. You know, maybe you've got some views and insights on them. But my feeling would be nice theme, lowish valuation, generating cash, beating numbers a little bit. You know, that's a pretty decent combination. So one that works for me, at least at this moment in time.
Yeah, do you know what? I hate gambling. It was just funny because I got mates of mine who love going to the horses, you know, and I don't like it because I just think the odds are stacked against you. And I think the difference between gambling and investing is that you can sway the odds to odds on in investing, whereas gambling you can't. First of all, the price is against you pretty much all the time, and then you're racing against other horses, and then you lose all your money if it goes wrong. So that doesn't happen in investing. If it goes a little bit wrong, you still have some money you can get out if you want, but you can still do lots of research. And even looking at charts, you can say, okay, the average price, the mean price is around here. If I can buy below that, and the fundamentals are good, the odds are that it may revert to mean, you know. So you've got a lot of good chance of putting your odds on. Whereas gambling, I think, is just odds against. It's a waste of money. But it's okay for a little mess around now and again. But people who think they can make money gambling, being silly, really. You know, the odds are stacked against you. Marvellous. Anyway, but there we are. You can invest in a gambling company there, and that's, so it's all of the odds. But
there you go.
Yeah, so what's next, Chris?
Yep, so that's GVC. So Sage is the next one. Sage is well known to many people. If they run a small or medium-sized business, you may well use their accounting software, payroll software and related. You know, they're a big friend to many entrepreneurs around the country, and actually globally, they're a global company. Look, they've come out with an interesting update today. The shares, when I last looked, were up over 5%, which is a good effort. And I think the reason why they're up is because they're talking again about shifting their business model towards something which is much more cloud-based, no great surprise there, much more recurring income, recurring revenue-centered, again, no great surprise. But actually, you know, reflecting this notion that Sage actually over the last few years has got a little bit behind the curve on all of these shifts. And as they're morphing their customer base towards these, you know, quite well-established now setups for software and related financial companies of being on the cloud, being focusing on subscriptions rather than, you know, buying something or, as a one-off, they're actually seeing sort of an improvement in their business stability, improvement in their business performance. And I think this actually sets them up nicely for outperformance in 2019. As I say, the shares responded well to the update today. I think they've had some difficult times in recent years. They changed their CEO a few months ago, who'd been promising this strategy but not really delivering. But I think actually the new guy, who's the ex-CFO of the business, actually has inherited a pretty good structure. Or, you know, if you like, all the tough work has been done and he's reaping some of the benefits. So one to keep an eye on. I like it here. It's pushed back through the 600 pence level this morning quite decisively. For me, that's a very interesting level to be getting involved in the shares. Low debt, low teens sort of earnings rating, good cash flow generation, and to me actually a business which is improving in quality as the recurring income element goes up and up.
Yeah, up 5.3%, which is no mean feat for a company, you know, valued at over 6 billion. So it's a bit of a big jump there. Cool. What's anything else, Chris?
So final one's got to be Whitbread. Now, you know, we've talked about Whitbread before on this chat, and, you know, we always used to refer to Costa and Premier Inn as their key brands. Well, of course, Costa's gone now. Coca-Cola bought that for a princely sum, a huge sum, in fact, and that deal completed earlier this month. So it's just really Premier Inn now. And it's kind of interesting, you know, there's sort of two views on Whitbread. One view would be Premier Inn is an absolutely fantastic business, which has got huge untapped potential and actually makes Whitbread a takeover candidate because now basically the business is Premier Inn and a couple of small other divisions. The other view would be that actually it's really interlinked with the UK economy. And all it is basically is a play on Brexit and uncertainty and whether UK economic growth is going to be good or bad. You can see elements of both in today's update. They're talking about a lot of potential, and they're still investing in the business and see lots of untapped scope for, you know, good price budget style hotels, and not just in this country but in Germany as well. But the other aspect is, unfortunately, they've said that, you know, conditions are a little bit uncertain, and actually in the last quarter they saw a slight like-for-like sales decline in their core accommodation business, meant that they've had actually negative like-for-like sales in the business. So, you know, there's a bit of push and pull there. The shares were initially down maybe 5%. I think when I last looked, they were only down a couple of percent as we talk. So no great disaster. I think clarity is going to come, and if you like, the bull and the bears are going to decide one way or t'other when they have a capital markets day in a couple of weeks' time, where they're going to outline their views on where they think the Premier Inn business could go over the next little while. So for me, I like Whitbread. I'm an owner of Whitbread stock. I love the cost of takeover. You know, that obviously bumped the stock very nicely. 50 quid, which the share reached effectively a week or two ago, has been a bit of a big old level for this one.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a watch. For me, it's a watch. Let's see what they say on the capital markets today. I think if you own it, you stick with it. I think there's a lot of potential. If you're watching it, chill, wait for the capital markets day, see what they say as they update the market on their strategy, and work out whether you buy into that or whether you think it's a takeover candidate, or whether you think actually the best bit of the business has gone now that the cost's been sold. But one to keep an eye on. I think a good quality business, they know what they're doing, and they're flush with cash now, of course, because Coca-Cola gave them a pretty penny or two, or quite a few more actually, for the Costa business.
Yeah, there's a big gap in the. I assume that's where they sold Costa. A big gap up where it went from 40 quid to 44 odd quid. And there's a couple of gaps there actually. And in fact, today it almost touched that again. So that's a good support level.
That's right.
If it goes below 44.50, it's going to go lower probably, but it may be support there. You know.
No, I think that's right. I think it moves in 5 quids, basic broad numbers. I mean, there's a bit of support below 40. You're right to mention just in the 45 odd area. And as I said, 50 has been a resistance. And then if you look even further back on the chart, I mean, there were, I think, if I remember, it went to 55 or 60 pounds at one point. So, you know, there's been a bit of movement on this one. But actually, I do fundamentally like the business. I thought they're two great brands. They sold Costa for a pretty sum. If any of those big hotel companies want to buy a sensible hotel brand, Premier Inn is there, package ready for them. You can't rule it out. You can't invest just for a hoped for takeover. You've got to invest on what you see. And for me, they're doing enough to keep me interested. I'm going to be all over the capital markets day in a couple of weeks to see how they perceive the opportunity for Premier Inn, not just in the UK, but as I say, Germany as well, where apparently bed and breakfast, you know, family-run bed and breakfast still dominate the market. They see that as a big growth opportunity, and I kind of agree with them.
Yeah, marvellous stuff for this WTB Whitbread. Thanks for that, Chris, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, 7 Digital, 7 DIG. At 4, Coro Energy, C-O-R-O. At 3, European Metal Holdings, EMH. At 2, AFC Energy. By the way, you can see an article on the front page of Vox here at voxmarkets.co.uk talking about AFC Energy. It deploys world's first hydrogen electric vehicle charger. Number one most followed company was from Red Emperor Resources, RMP. All right, RNSs are as follows. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Windida Gold Project Presentation. That's from ECR Minerals. At 4, Management Resource Solutions, half-year trading update and full-year guidance. At 3, Extract Resources, Manika Gold Alluvial Mining Contractor Agreement, XTR. At 2, Infrastrata, application for inclusion on the 4th PCI list. And the number one most liked RNS came from 88 Energy, operations update, permit to drill approved. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.